This is Glenn Hauser with World of Radio 2000. This is Glenn Hauser with World of Radio 2000. World of Radio is a listener-supported public service program about communications around the world. Above all, the dynamic medium of international shortwave between the AM and FM bands. On this edition, recorded September 19th, Antarctica, Bahamas, Bermuda, Cuba, Denmark, France, Isle of Man, Myanmar, Norway, USA, Vietnam. An interview with me and the Propagation Outlook. Standard disclaimer. First of all, I'm very gratified by the many congratulatory messages that have come in, marking the 2000th edition of this program, World of Radio. This, of course, is significant only for those of us observing the decimal or base 10 system, but nevertheless, much appreciated. However, I must admit that in years past, I produced 38 additional programs as Continent of Media or World of Radio Extras. So we already reached 2,000 of these shows some 38 weeks ago. Adrian Corol of RAI in Buenos Aires advises us of a special broadcast from LRA 36 in Antarctica, Saturday, September 21st, between 1300 and 1415 UT, on 15476. Correct reception reports sent by email will be verified with a special EQSL. It's lra36@hotmail.com. He says the arrival of spring is a very good reason for this, as well as the approaching 40th anniversary of the station, which will be on the 20th of October. He also invites email in advance with greetings, comments, and suggestions to be read during the program. He doesn't say anything about whether you have to hear it direct on your own radio, or as so many are doing now via remote receivers. As soon as he learned about this, Dan Robinson said, LRA 36 was again putting in excellent signals via the Pardinho São Paulo remote September 18th at 18:30, including an ID in English, which he had never heard before. I often check for a trace of LRA 36 here in Oklahoma. And finally, on that same date, September 18th, for the first time in a long time, I did detect a just barely audible carrier measured on 15475.971 at 1811 UT. Walt Samaniv laments that it's not heard as well as it used to be. Manuel Mendez in Spain suspects it's not running as much power as originally, like so many other shortwave stations. More about the Bahamas radio situation following Hurricane Dorian. Terry Kruger in Florida about ZNS-3 Freeport, Grand Bahama on 810 kHz says it did not take them several days to get back on the air. In fact, they actually returned within 24 hours of the hurricane's passage sometime on September 5th. Visiting Miami, Richard Langley has been hearing it too, noting that although they've resumed their gospel music format, they do hook up with ZNS in Nassau for news on the hour, such as 16 and 17 UT on September 16th, but not every hour. About the long-wave beacon ZLS on 526 kHz at Stella Maris I mentioned last week was frequently reported. Well, it used to be, but Terry Kruger reminds us that it has not been heard for several years. In fact, the latest report of it I could find by searching was from the year 2013. Attention all our listeners in Bermuda. Artie Bigley found a story at bernews.com that a local shortwave listeners club is planned for Bermuda. The article has a nice write-up about what shortwave listening is all about and how it is still a factor. Here's the person to contact if you'd like to be involved. wendan3001@gmail.com. After quite a long break, Radio Vanacuma will resume providing an FM service on the 13 MHz band. That is, spur blobs coming out of the 13700 AM transmitter, heard before and or after 14 UT on September 15th, 16th, and 18th but not on the 14th, 17th, or 19th. Stig Hartvig Nielsen of World Music Radio in Denmark notified everyone on Hardcore DX September 14th. In a completely unexpected move, the Danish authorities have withdrawn permission to use out-of-band frequencies on a non-interference basis for WMR. We will be ceasing operations on 5840 and 15805 after Sunday, September 15th at 22 UT. WMR may return to shortwave using frequencies inside the official bands, but this may take several months. We'll continue to be available via internet streaming at wmr.dk and soon also on medium wave 927 in Copenhagen. Meanwhile, Dan Srebnick in New Jersey says, I received my first shortwave broadcast QSL in years via U.S. mail today. World Music Radio verified a 2004 report on 5815 for 7 kilowatts. It was mailed from Andorra, site of the recent EDXC meeting. In the NASPA group, Rich D'Angelo says he also got verifications, including one for a report of in the year 2002. I guess after a sesquidecade, they've decided to empty out the in-basket while visiting the EDXC conference in Andorra. What about the other Danish shortwave station in a similar situation, Radio OZ Viola on 5825? Checking his FB page. Unfortunately, our good friend and colleague had to stop his broadcasts, referring to WMR, since he cannot get his license renewed from the authorities. The same can happen for us when we try to renew ours in a few months. The Danish authorities had issued him and WMR a temporary trial frequency, which had to be renewed annually. That's via Paul Watson in the British DX Club. At WRTH FB, Mauno Rito says, I don't understand this. Why can't those frequencies be used on non-interference basis for your low-power stations, if 100 times stronger stations can also do it, such as WWCR and WRMI? Also from WRTHFB via Australian DX News, Mauno Riedel says, there will be a special transmission via TDF Issoudun France for the sailing race Mini Transat, September 22nd to 29th, at 15 to 16 UT daily on 13730 AM and 15300 DRM. There will be a second leg in early November. Check www.minitransat.fr. Via Mike Terry in the British DX Club, another special broadcast by Radio Caroline North, the weekend of September 21st and 22nd. Broadcast live from Ross Revenge, transmitted via Isle of Man Manx Radio on 1368 kHz for the Northwest and on 648 kHz for southeastern England. No exact times given. Regarding Myanmar, Ron Howard summarizes what's been discussed at WRTHFB. Wolfgang Buescher reports that Myanmar on 6030, 6165, 7200 and 9590 are all off the air, and was wondering if anyone had a contact to inquire. Ron Howard says he got a reply. These are all Tazin radio frequencies. September 16th. Thanks for your attention to our broadcasting. You said all frequencies silent. Yesterday, broadcasting stopped temporarily because of the supply of electricity went off. Now we are broadcasting on 7345, 6165, and 9590. From Alan Pennington in the British DX Club, Norway, NRK to close long wave 153 kHz, but upgrade its last medium wave station. This in turn comes from the Ministry of Culture via Bjarne Mjelde on dxing.info FB. The last long-wave station, Ingui, on 153 kHz is to close in October. The one remaining medium-wave station, Longyearbyen, 14.85 kHz, actually on Svalbard or Spitsbergen, is proposed to be upgraded to 3 kilowatts. They've concluded there are better alternatives to long-wave, but there is still reliance on that medium-wave transmitter at Svalbard. Last week we had PR from USAGM that John Lansing was leaving but would be taking over the leadership of National Public Radio. Diane Robinson refers us to some other press taking issue with this. There have been some very interesting pieces at the Daily Caller and a commentary by Laura Flanders on Common Dreams. A report by investigative reporter Luke Rosiak in the Daily Caller, September 11th, starts out, John Lansing is a former Obama appointee who was named president and CEO of NPR. He has previously been head of cable TV company Scripps Networks, where he sold $10 million in stock after the company became the target of an SEC probe that was not known to the public. Experts say the behavior could have constituted insider trading. At Common Dreams, Laura Flanders says, I don't know about you, but I take a teeny-weeny bit of offense when a guy in a glass house lobs a great big stone and expects me not to notice the sound of shattering. Which brings me to National Public Radio. When the ubiquitous News and Public Affairs Network announced the appointment of a new CEO, it noted that John Lansing made his mark in his current job with stirring defenses of journalism free from government interference. This had me picking through the shards when they went on to explain that Lansing comes to NPR from the United States Agency for Global Media, a federally funded organization whose express mission is to interfere in journalism by doing it in such a way as to promote American policy values all across the world. Dan Robinson says, Flanders is the first, besides myself and a few other outside observers, to point out the unseemly swinging door between the U.S. AGM and NPR. It's indeed quite strange and has escaped any thorough examination by any major media organization, including NPR itself. There has been a string of scandals at U.S. AGM under Lansing's leadership. Interested in the other side of the story, go to bbgwatch.com. But what about Lansing's replacement to head U.S. AGM? David Cole sends a Real Clear Politics story of September 19th by Susan Crabtree, Trump's choice for broadcasting chief on Senate hot seat. That's Michael Pack, whose nomination has been delayed for 16 months because of his connections with Steve Bannon. Of course, there's a lot more to all these stories than we can go into here, so I suggest you read the original reports. Concerning World of Radio scheduling on WRMI, now for 2 weeks in a row, something else has appeared Wednesday at 21 UT on 9955, so although it's still on the web sched, we may assume that is no longer a time for us. Checking the daily twits from Alan Weiner, Artie Bigley forwards this from September 19th. All working on the superstation driver design issues. That's the latest item explaining the delay. But he says on air soon everywhere. September 17th at 0632 UT, I found a strong dominant signal on 1590 from Smart Talk WCGO. That's Evanston, Illinois, actually Chicago. At night, they're supposed to be beaming 2.5 kilowatts to the northeast, but we're to the southwest, while the day pattern is non-directional with 10 kilowatts, I suspect. That's what they were actually running. Also in 1590, some interesting interference in Spanish, which could be one of three Texans or even the last remaining Mexican. During a trip through the West, Harold Froge from Michigan reports hearing, while in Provo and Orem, Utah, Radio Free Provo, or is it Free Radio Provo, on 87.9 FM, September 11th and 12th, playing a weird assortment of tunes, including punk rock. Ron Howard in California reports on Ho Chi Minh Radio Vietnam, 8812 USB, September 17th from 1337 until off at 1358. It's a coastal station that normally gives very brief marine coastal conditions, but this time it was a program with a completely different format and on the air for a much longer period, over 20 minutes, and even played some nice Vietnamese songs. The media magazine you monitor with your mind, World of Radio number 2000. Also bringing you the non-commercial website worldofradio.com and publication DX Listening Digest. Our thanks this week for financial support from Gerald T. Pollard in Raleigh, North Carolina, who sends a generous check whenever there is an equinox or solstice to Glenn Hauser, P.O. Box 1684, ENID OK 73702. One may also contribute via PayPal, not necessarily in U.S. funds, to WORADIO@yahoo.com. And now for something completely different. Last May, Charles Van Sant of WRRS in Cincinnati interviewed me over the phone. And for the rest of this program, let's hear the first part of it.
This is Monitor on WRRS. I'm Charlie Van Sant, and it's great to have you with us. Monitor is a show about radio, broadcasting history, amateur radio, AM, FM, shortwave, and more.
This is Glenn Hauser with World of Radio, 1980. LRA-36 Antarctica continues to be active, apparently only on Tuesdays and Thursdays. I was not able to hear it on Tuesday, April 30th in the morning, but I could detect a just barely audible carrier on Thursday, May 2nd at 14:05, measured on 15475.971.
Today, a visit with Glenn Hauser, host of World of Radio. It's a program which is heard around the world on shortwave stations and on local stations here in the U.S. Glenn has over 2,000 shows to his credit, talking about radio propagation and shortwave listening. And today, he'll talk to us.
I started out as a TV DXer, strangely enough, as we first got our TV set in New Mexico, where I was living as a child. And we were getting some TV DX. But we already had an old Philco console radio with shortwave bands on it. So I got into first into medium wave DXing and finally into shortwave. And eventually I did get an S38E as my first shortwave receiver and hammered an HQ160 later on and various others since then.
So you definitely know what it is to warm up a room with tubes.
Yes, although not anymore.
No, I'm afraid that those days are probably gone, although a lot of people still enjoy collecting those old boat anchors. And if you can get one that's in fairly good working order, they still perform amazingly.
Right.
TVDX, that's very interesting because with the advent of digital television, is TVDXing still even a possibility? Because I know it's either even digital, it's either all there or it's all not. And I know in those days with the analog signals, especially like on Channel 2 and some of those channels, it was probably a lot better propagation compared to now.
Yeah, it is still possible, although it is, as you say, much more difficult. There's some guys who have racked up quite a number of DTV DX catches by sporadic E on the lower channels. I've had very little luck with that. It's really because I don't have the best antennas. But you could still get tropospheric TVDX on UHF or even VHF. I've had it out to 600 miles or so in Minnesota on occasion.
Now, did you actually go on once you had this interest? Did you go on to get some kind of a degree at a university somewhere? Or?
Yes, but it really had nothing to do with that. My degree was in broadcast journalism at the University of New Mexico.
And you did get into broadcasting. Now, I was going over your Wikipedia page, which I hope is fairly accurate. I hope maybe you wrote it so that it's as accurate as it can possibly be. But I see that you actually began on Radio Canada. I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit about that.
Yes, I was a contributor to the DX program on Radio Canada International Shortwave for a number of years, also on Radio Netherlands DX Jukebox.
And you also, I guess, developed other programs. You had a Spanish edition of World of Radio. Did you have actually somebody else do that with your material, or did you do it yourself?
Oh, I did it myself, just reprocessing and translating World of Radio material. That was actually for the Spanish DX program of Radio Nederland originally. So I already had the material put together for that, then I repackaged it into my own
Mundo Radio.
I see. And that was on for several years, I guess?
Yes, quite a number of years. In fact, until Radio Netherlands bit the dust. The Spanish lasted longer than the English as far as my participation.
I see. World of Radio debuted in 1980 on WUOT-FM in Knoxville, Tennessee.
Yes, that's where I was a full-time employee at the time.
Now, you were a broadcast journalist. You were trained as a broadcast journalist. Were you also doing news reporting there in Knoxville, or were you primarily concentrating on your DX show?
Neither. Actually, I was music director, announcing and programming classical music by that time.
But the DX was sort of an extra thing that you sort of evolved into then.
Well, I had the chance to, the production facilities and the chance to do it there. Originally, it was just fillers of variable lengths after another program, and then I eventually turned it into a regular half hour when I got it on some shortwave stations.
How did you go about getting stations interested in carrying a program like that? It seems like a good fit, but maybe at the time, maybe it was a little more of a challenge.
Well, the first one was WRNO in New Orleans, which had recently come on the air. You know, I don't recall having much of a problem getting it on or exactly what happened, but I brought it up to Joe Costello, who ran the station, and he thought it would be a good addition.
And how did you gather your material in those days? I know I've listened to your programs. I listened to several replays on your website, and we'll talk about that in a few moments. But it looks as though you maybe do have some DXers out there who provide information. I know there have been publications over the years that also give reports about sunspot activity and who's picking up what and where they are and so forth and so on. How did you evolve into all that?
Well, there were a number of DX clubs with print publications, some of them weekly or monthly, and I was involved in most of them before the Internet era. So I had lots of sources, and I've always been interested in compiling material, which is what really takes up most of my time even today, going over all these sources and pulling out info that I think is significant or interesting. Of course, most of that now is almost all that is over the Internet.
But back in those days, I guess you were doing phone calls or getting just regular snail mail?
Mostly snail mail. But I was publishing my own magazine, Review of International Broadcasting, and later added another one called DX Listening Digest, with more of an emphasis on the DX rather than the program angle.
When you started doing the DX reports, I would imagine that shortwave radio was a lot more vibrant than it is today. It seems like nowadays a lot of the governments have shut down their systems. It seems like it's a lot of religion, and I don't hear a whole lot else.
I'm afraid you're right. As far as actually listening to programming from different countries, there's not much left that we can hear directly or even via relay stations. Country after country just cut off shortwave or partially cut it off. You know, the BBC World Service used to be easy to hear here. It is no longer, at least not on shortwave. A few years ago, Radio Australia quit altogether, and there have been many others. In fact, the main one left from Europe that's still broadcasting in English to North America is, of all things, Romania, although they've been hinting that they may be cutting off shortwave in a few years, too.
Is it like commercial broadcasting where the people in charge decide that they can save some money? That's what I always ran into in my 40 years in radio and television, that it just seemed like if they could find a new way to make the buffalo on the nickel squeal, they would do it.
Well, most of these stations are not commercial at all, so it's a matter of government priorities. But I guess they have the same idea that they need to spend their money some other way.
So at that time, when you first began, I know you were DXing TV, and then you moved into the radio part with the shortwave and so forth. The bands must have been alive in those early years. I remember listening myself as a youngster, and I remember with my first shortwave radio, it was a Christmas present, a Radio Shack, a realistic with four bands, and put a long wire on that thing, and you just it opened the world up, didn't it?
Oh, yes. Of course, it all depended on how deeply you wanted to go into it. With a really sensitive receiver and a good antenna system, you could pull in weak domestic shortwave stations in other countries which weren't really intended to be heard abroad, or at least not very far away. That's the fun of DXing, even if you couldn't understand the language, just picking up all these little stations.
How do you go about doing that when you hear a foreign broadcast that you don't know the language? Do you have guides that you can refer to determine, let's see, if it's on that frequency, it must be whichever country and so forth?
Yes, currently there are three very excellent online frequency lists, which are updated often. So it's pretty easy to look up what should be there. Often there's more than one thing. You have to figure out which one it is. Of course, along with all this, I have been very interested in languages, foreign languages. I've studied several of them, and as a result of the shortwave involvement, can recognize many other languages that I don't really understand. So that's really helpful.
How did you go about doing that? Was there a particular trick you used, or Rosetta Stone? I assume that you must have had something that worked for you.
Well, that was before that came along, I think. No, I've never tried that. I formerly studied Spanish and Portuguese mainly in high school and college, and dabbled in some other languages.
What are the ideal conditions, for example, for a very rare station? Do other stations have to be off the air? Does the propagation have to be such a way that it's just possible maybe for a couple of nights and then it vanishes? So what are some of the impediments to getting that great DX?
Those are two of the factors. You have to know about how propagation works. Certain frequencies will propagate over certain paths at certain times of day or night. If there are other stations on the same frequency, and on the lower bands, for instance, if they're in the daytime, they won't be getting out. While if there's a nighttime path between them and you, then there's a possibility. And, of course, one hopes there is not co-channel interference, but there often is.
What impact do the foreign stations have as far as do they get interfered with a lot, even say deliberately, not just necessarily because of another station that's nearby on the dial, but do governments sometimes throw in some jamming to make it more challenging?
Yes. Well, their objective is not to make it more challenging, of course, but to block reception in their home country. The main culprits these days are Cuba, China, and North Korea, and a few others. Here and there, there's a lot of jamming by Cuba of Radio Marti and U.S. other clandestine broadcasts in Spanish, which is, of course, being so close, that jamming is quite a problem for our reception of those and other stations. China uses a different tactic. They put some of their main home service program, China National Radio, primarily on many frequencies, many, many frequencies, for broadcasts into China from Taiwan, the USA, and even jam the BBC in English because so many Chinese now understand English.
But somehow, some way, a lot of people still get the message, don't they?
Yes, one hopes so. It's, of course, audience research on shortwave is rather difficult or not done at all.
Thank you, Charles Fensad of WRRS in Cincinnati. We'll play the rest of the interview in weeks to come. The propagation outlook from Boulder issued September 16th. Geomagnetic field reaching moderate G2 storm levels on September 27th with AN candidates of 35 and 6, and on the 28th, 45 and 6. Solar flux 68, creeping up to 69, and a little bitty spike to 70 only on October 7th. Glenn Hauser concluding World of Radio number 2000 with a standard disclaimer.